Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
Did you know that we spend around 70% of our lives sitting or lying completely still? A sedentary lifestyle is not only bad for your body, it can also result in anxiety, depression, and a lower overall IQ.
Our guest on this episode is science journalist Caroline Williams, who says simple movement has the power to improve every aspect of our lives. Caroline is the author of the new book, Move: How the New Science of Body Movement Can Set Your Mind Free. Caroline, we thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Why did you decide to tackle this topic? I mean, it's a fascinating one.
Well, I mean, I've been a science journalist for about 20 odd years now. And a lot of that time, I've been fascinated with the human mind, you know, why it is that we think the way we do, why we have these amazing brains, but also why there are these kind of glitches that seem to come as part of the deal. So, you know, our inability to focus, you know, that creativity turns up when it's least convenient to actually be useful, anxiety, depression, you know, all these kind of downsides of our human minds. And I've always been interested in, well, what can we do about that? What can we do to improve the way we think and the way we feel? And for a lot of years, that was really focused in the head, you know, talking about brain plasticity and what we can do to change our brains. And that was what my first book was about. But one of the things that came out of that was that treating your brain as if it's not attached to the rest of you is kind of a really strange way of thinking about it, because clearly things you do with your body affect the way you feel. And I've known for, I have a very boisterous dog who may or may not burst in through the door any minute, who drags me out for long walks. And, you know, if I'm stuck on a piece of work, I down tools, I go for a walk, I feel better, it clears my head. You know, that's been known for a long time. Why is that, is what I wanted to know. You know, why does dancing make us feel happy? You know, what can we do with our bodies, and why are these, what are the connections that explain why moving our body affects the way we think and feel? And I wanted to look at that in the context of our increasingly sedentary lives, and whether that's connected to the way we're having all these issues in our mental and emotional lives. So that's kind of where I started. I sort of started off with the question, why is it that I feel good when I move? And are there specific ways that we can move that will have specific effects? Because we've known for a long time, exercise endorphins makes you happy. We've known for a long time that exercise improves the brain. It makes it more likely to connect, make connections and grow blood vessels and just work better. But I wondered if there's something more than that. We could take it further and say, well, this is how we should be moving. Because let's face it, we haven't all got that much time to be squeezing in more things we should be doing.
So how beneficial is it to just move around for a few minutes rather than just have to, you know, carve out the time to go to the gym every single day for an hour and the commute time to the gym? I mean, is it okay if we just do a little bit?
Is that possibly better? I mean, so there's been studies looking at the health of the brain and cognition throughout the life, and declines of age-related declines in our memory and brain function in general and emotional health. They correlate with the amount of time we spend sedentary, regardless of whether or not we're doing high intensity exercise. So you could say that, you know, if you sit for 8 hours and then go for a big run during your lunch break, that doesn't necessarily offset all the sitting. So in a way, it's better to kind of move little and often, whether that's, you know, getting up, going to make a cup of tea, or, you know, just doing some quick movements, whether that's running up and down the stairs, walking around the block, you know, anything. There's some people I met along the way who do natural movement, and they have these things called movement snacks, which can be just kind of crawling along the floor for a bit, or hanging from a door frame, or just doing anything. But it doesn't have to be that dramatic. Just feeding movement into your day a bit more can really do wonders.
What kind of an impact has the pandemic had on our sedentary lifestyle? Do you think it's made people more sedentary, or have a lot of people tried to incorporate more movement into their lives because they know they're maybe sitting at home and stuck on the computer a lot more than they had been before?
Yeah, and you also have so many options for virtual exercise. Well, as that's well. True. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I think in my house anyway, I live with, you know, my husband and son, we're all very restless, don't like sitting still kinds of people. And we fully embraced it. Like, you know, when, and in the UK, there was a point at which you were only allowed out to exercise once a day. And so everybody was just kind of going out for long walks, for bike rides and that kind of thing. And so for a short while, people were really getting into, you know, the only thing you were allowed to do was get out and do some exercise. But I think that did drop off after a while. And there seemed to be sort of two camps. There are people that are like, yes, I don't have to commute anymore, I can go for an early morning swim. And other people that just said, I literally have gone from my bed to my desk, to my sofa, to my bed. So I think, I mean, I don't have any figures on it, but I get the sense that there's probably more people who are more sedentary, because you don't realize when you commute to an office job how much walking is involved in that, and, you know, just getting up from your desk to go and talk to people. So you sort of have to build it in. And I think the longer this situation has gone on, we're all back to working at home in the UK again now, you know, people are just kind of on back-to-back calls now. So the kind of the glory period of, oh, well, you're expected to go out and do your exercise may have passed a little bit. So yeah, I think overall it's not been great for us.
Is it beneficial to kind of switch it up during the day and say, do 5 minutes of dance 1 hour and the next hour lift weights for 5 minutes? Or is it pretty much as long as we're moving, it's the same?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends what you want to get from it, really. So dance is, I mean, I could have written a whole book on dance, and other people have done. It was just fascinating why humans need to dance. And part of it is to do with connecting with other people. So this was kind of relevant during, you know, lockdowns, that the reason we feel connected when we're dancing with other people is that it confuses our sort of body brain pathways. So when we're moving, we know where our body is in space. But if somebody is moving in synchrony with us, then the sort of information from our own bodies becomes sort of mixed up with what's coming in from our senses about what their body's doing. And it sort of has this effect of making us feel almost like we're one, like we're connected in some way. And so that's kind of that's one of the theories about why dance might have evolved in the first place, is a social glue that kind of kept us feeling like we should stick together. And so that's a really good way. So if you're feeling lonely, for example, even if you don't have anyone to dance with, there's some evidence that if you're dancing to music, because that's made by humans, making human movements, and you're moving your body and to their body movements, then that can have a similar effect. You kind of feel bonded, like you're part of the band almost.
Yeah, my mom and I were looking the other day at these YouTube videos where it's just like one song that you do, that you dance to, and how much of a difference that makes on your mood. It's just not overwhelming, and it's fun.
And you watch other people dancing to the, yes, on the video. So even if you're by yourself in your room, you're watching other people like doing the dance. And
you're all trying to follow the choreography. Not well.
Exactly.
Do you think that translates then, even if you are by yourself, but you're watching, you know, an exercise class or a dance video, that you're connecting with those on the video?
I would say so. It's probably not as powerful as being in the room. I did a lot of you know, virtual Zoom yoga classes and stuff during the lockdowns. And it was good to be part of that community, but it's not the same as being physically with people. And, you know, you can hear them breathing in time with you, and, you know, you're bumping into each other and laughing, and, you know, you're interacting with them socially. But I think as a better than nothing situation, yeah, it's better than just doing it by yourself and listening to an audio CD of someone saying jump around.
Tell us more about what science is learning about the cognitive benefits of walking and regular movement, and how those things can prevent dementia.
Yeah, well, there's some really scary statistics about sort of sedentary lifestyles and dementia. So the one that hit me was that 13% of Alzheimer's cases can be traced to a sedentary lifestyle. I mean, it's quite terrifying. And especially when you think about that the most important time to, you know, ready your brain for for old age is sort of middle age, the time when no one has any time to be going out doing activities. So it's really, really important that we build this stuff into our life. And walking is just such a multi-tool activity that, you know, you can build in just to your day. And there are different ways of doing it that have different effects. So, I mean, my favorite one is that there's psychology studies that suggest that when people are physically moving forward through space, and it doesn't have to be walking, it can be cycling or kayaking or, you know, whatever it is you want to do moving forward, that it affects the way we perceive time. So most of us think of like the past is behind us and the future is in front of us, and we're moving along this imaginary timeline. And there's studies been done that suggest that if you're moving forward through space physically, it feels like the future is closer to you and the past is further behind you. So it makes it more difficult to sort of get stuck in this sort of rumination of, you know, things that you've done or said, or, you know, and get stuck in the past, which is really relevant to things like depression, and that it can help you feel like you're getting somewhere. And that's something I definitely found during lockdowns and things. You need to get out, get going, and you don't feel quite so stuck and quite so hemmed in emotionally as well as physically. So that's one of the really, really important things that I think walking can do for our mental state. There's also the sort of mind wandering aspect and creativity. So one of the things that's been linked to our sedentary lifestyles is that this decline in creativity, which is really hard to measure, but there's some indications that as a society, we're not coming up with as great new ideas as we used to. And one way to put your mind into your brain into a more creative state is to sort of temporarily turn down activity in the frontal bits of your brain, which is a bit behind your forehead, which are sort of the gatekeepers for ideas. They're the ones that say, "That was silly. You can't say that in a meeting. It would be inappropriate. You know, that wouldn't work. Don't be ridiculous." And turning down activity in that part of the brain sort of opens your mind. You think more broadly, and you might consider things that you've not thought of before. And, you know, there's lots of ways of turning down that activity, like having a beer, for example. experiments that I've been part of where you have a transcranial direct current stimulation on your brain, and they sort of electrically interfere with activity, and that makes you more creative. It's kind of fascinating. But a very simple user-friendly way to do that is to go for a walk and let your mind wander. And this is one thing that Charles Darwin did when he was thinking about how to come up with the theory of evolution. He had all this sort of information from his travels, and he couldn't quite get the headspace to kind of coalesce it all into sort of one theory that made sense. And he moved out of London, moved to the countryside, and built himself this walking path where he just would meander round and round in circles every day, just kind of thinking big thoughts. And that's when it kind of came to him. So I think we do get this idea that the best way to have work ideas, to come up with solutions for things, is to sit and bang our head off a desk. And I'm as guilty of that as anyone. But if we can get it into our minds that really going out and going for a walk counts as work, if you're mulling something over and you're just, you know, you're letting your mind wander, that counts as work, and you might come up with much better ideas and solutions than you would ever sitting at your desk just sort of stagnating and getting bored.
That makes so much sense to me about cardio. But why is it that just lifting weights makes us feel so good? I love lifting weights.
Yeah, I mean, this really surprised me as well, because, you know, we've known for a long time that fitness and mental health and cognitive health, these things are all linked, and, you know, endorphins and happy hormones and all these kinds of things, we've known that. But there are studies where lifting weights, becoming physically stronger, regardless of whether you've become cardio fitter or not, can improve your cognitive function. It can, it's really, really effective for reducing symptoms of anxiety and depression, and makes people feel more powerful. There was this study done in the late 80s with some teenage girls who increased their strength by like 40% over the course of 12 weeks. And afterwards, they started reporting that they felt more capable in all kinds of walks of life. So whether they were having, you know, things that had nothing to do with fighting or being physical, just things like having difficult conversations, they felt more sure of themselves. And so there's this really nice idea that it sort of basically comes back to the fact that your body is constantly sending messages to your brain and back and forth. Sort of, I think of it as like having kids in the back of the car, that just nattering on all the time and they never shut up. So there's all this information. And if you make your body physically stronger, the information coming from your body, from your muscles, from your bones, from all the tendons and everything is, I've got this covered, I can handle it, I'm strong. And that kind of gives you this sort of implicit sense of confidence that you can't even put your finger on really, but will make you feel less anxious, more in control of your life. And so I think strength is one thing. It's starting to change a little bit, but people have really neglected strength. And everything that's been done about strength has been, okay, well, we need to do it for our bone health and da, da, da. But there's really good evidence that it makes you feel less anxious, more in control of your life, and just better around. So yeah, I'm a big fan of lifting weights.
I was encouraged to read what you wrote when you said there is almost nothing that moving more can't help us achieve. That is quite a statement.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to improve your focus, then go out for a brisk walk, run, or whatever that kind of gets you, kind of gets everything pumping, gets everything going. If you want to be more creative, go for a wander. If you want to feel more powerful, lift weights, you know, stress control, the links between the core muscles and the stress response. There's basically anything you want from your mind. There's something you can do with your body that can make you feel better. Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little about the strong core helping us handle stressful situations?
Yeah. So this is really new research, and I wouldn't want to like annoy the scientists by saying it's a done deal. We know exactly what's going on, but there's been some really interesting new research that shows neural links. So basically wiring from the adrenal glands, which are sort of on top, they sit on top of our kidneys and they pump out adrenaline when we're stressed. And if they trace the neural pathways back to the brain, they end up in the part of the brain that informs movement, that controls voluntary movement. And more importantly, most of those connections end up in the bit of the brain that controls the core. So this is kind of an indication that we don't know which way the messages go at the moment, but given that there's lots of psychology results and evidence that if you're sitting up straight, then you feel more in control. And if you feel slumped, then you feel more, you know, you can get over stress. So people have been doing experiments where you have to do a very stressful task, like giving an impromptu talk to loads of people who are staring at you and looking judgmental. And people who beforehand have been walking upright recover faster from stress than people who have been sort of being slumped. And so there's these lines of evidence are sort of converging that maybe there's something special about the way we move our core and core strength that tells our brain that our bodies are on the move and that is part of running away and that is part of getting to safety, and that these things are all intertwined. We have evidence that things like Tai Chi and yoga and Pilates are great stress busters. Is that because they strengthen the core? We don't know for sure yet, but it does seem like a really interesting avenue to follow over the next few years. So I'm really excited to see what they come up with on that.
What are some realistic goals to try to set? If we have been having a sedentary lifestyle and we hear about the research you're reporting on and we think, hey, I really need to change things, where do we start with those goals?
I mean, it's really a matter of just little and often is the way to do it, I think. I mean, I spend a lot more time, you know, because like many people, my job involves sitting down and typing away. But I'll mix it up. So I might go and sit down on the floor and, you know, because that helps with mobility. It also means that at some point you have to get up off the floor and that strengthens the legs and improves your balance. And, you know, there's all these ways of just kind of getting movement into your life. And there's been research in people, the blue zones, I don't know if you've come across them, where people are a lot more likely to live to 100 than anywhere else in the world. And there's been lots of studies of these people. What is their secret? And one of the things is that they don't exercise, but they have movement as part of their life. So they garden, they go foraging. There's a population in Okinawa of Japan where they have very low tables and they squat down and they stand up. And so they're constantly working their leg strength and their balance. And so it's a matter of just kind of getting whatever you will do in. I mean, there's no one way of moving or exercising that is for everybody. So it's whatever you will do and whatever you can shoehorn in as a part of your life, I think is the important thing to do.
What was the most surprising thing that you learned during your research?
Most surprising thing. I was kind of blown away by the fact that our bones are a endocrine organ, which means they secrete hormones. So I think you know, we often think of our bones as being these kind of dry, sticky stuff that kind of holds us up. But actually, it's constantly being built up, depending on how much we challenge it, how much work against gravity our bones have to do, and broken down again if we're not putting any stress on it at all. So we know that because people come back from zero gravity, astronauts, and they lose bone mass, and people who are on bed rest lose bone mass. But one thing that's now becoming known is that when the bones are being built up, when they're being stressed, put under pressure, they release a hormone into the blood called osteocalcin, which goes through our blood, through the blood into the brain, and has something to do with improving memory and decreasing anxiety. And that's kind of really fascinating to me that, you know, there's stuff going on in our bodies that we know nothing about that affects the way we think and the way we feel. That was a big surprise to me. Also the fascia, which is sort of basically, if you think of it like cling film or saran wrap, I think you guys call it, yeah, that sort of like wraps our muscles and wraps everything, keeps our organs from bumping into each other inside our bodies. But that's a biologically active substance. So I told you the dog was going to burst in. Meet Django. He's now saying he'd like to go out for a walk. It's dark. No. So one thing we're learning about the fascia is that when it's moved and stretched, that biological changes happen at the level of the cells that release anti-inflammatory compounds, which then have an effect on our mental health and our ability to respond to stress. There's all kinds of stuff that's going on basically that we don't think of. And there's lots of myth stuff. Like, so I've done yoga for a lot of years, and you often hear yoga teachers saying, wring out those toxins from your muscles and from your organs. And I've always thought, what a load of rubbish. That can't be right. If you needed to wring out your organs, why would the body put them in cages? You know, it's very well protected in there. But this stuff about fascia suggests that, you know, movement, just normal kind of levels of movement without wringing them out, sort of compresses this tissue, and it's like a sponge sort of structure, and it's fluid, and as we move, it sort of compresses and it sort of squidges all this liquid through to the lymphatic system, where it all goes through the immune system and gets cleaned out. And so it starts to sound a little bit less far-fetched when you think of it like that, that you, by moving, you're helping your body do all the cleaning up and the housekeeping it needs to do. And if you just sit around all the time, then everything just stagnates, and it's not surprising we feel pretty rough.
How helpful do you think cell phones are in terms of keeping us on track and helping us to measure our steps and other activities to kind of, you know, be a little bit of a motivator there?
Yeah, they're a real double-edged sword, aren't they, really? I mean, I'm really bad at scrolling and getting stuck in scrolling paralysis. But at the same time, you know, I have my smartwatch, which connects to my phone, and I like to, you know, I like to know that I've done 20,000 steps, and yay me. I'm like a, you know, the studies I've done of these hunter-gatherer populations in Tanzania, and I'm like, yes, I've gone as many steps as the Hadza do when they're out hunting and gathering. Yes, yay me. So, I mean, it can be a real motivator. But on the other hand, they are just a bit too easy to sit and stare at, aren't they? That's the trouble.
And I want to go back to that statistic about how the Western world spends more than 70% of their time sitting. How many people do you think were sitting, you know, back in 1950 compared to now? Was it a lot worse?
Yeah. What are the differences?
Yeah, there is a difference. I don't have the kind of statistic to my, I think we move something like 30% less than the people than our sort of predecessors in the 60s, something like that. I mean, it's quite staggering how much we.
Thanks to technology.
Yeah. We've sort of basically created a world where we don't have to move. You know, you can quite, you know, I could sit here at my desk now and order myself some takeaway that would arrive to my door. I'd have to walk as far as my door to get it. You know, you can date from your desktop. You know, you can find a life partner if you want to. You know, everything can be done with just moving your fingers and thumbs nowadays. You know, we're the only animal on the planet that can get away with that. And you know, we're very clever for doing that, but we do miss out on all the benefits. We evolved to move, and our bodies and our brains evolved together so that when we move and do hunting and gathering, our brains invest in capacity. And if we don't, then they shrink down capacity. So we're really not doing ourselves any favors by letting somebody else do the hunting and gathering and bring it to the door.
What message do you have for parents in terms of getting their kids moving?
Well, that's a tricky one. I've got a 12-year-old son who is quite good at finding reasons not to come out for a walk with the dog, but we do drag them. I think one thing I think is really, really important is that I think it's quite possible to go through school and think that movement, exercise, sport is not for you, because most of the focus is on team sports and things like that. And I think what we need to do is to help children find a way of moving that suits them, that you don't have to say to them, this will make you feel strong and powerful. Just something that they love doing and they get the benefits, and they're kind of at some point they'll work it out for themselves. So during the book research, I spoke to this great guy called Terry Kravaznik, who lives in California now. He's from the UK originally, and he's a stuntman and performer, acrobat. And what he does now most of the time is he trains kids to do really cool parkour tricks, flips and things like that. But he sort of does it in a way that he teaches them that they have this inner strength and resilience that they don't know they have, because they're obviously challenging themselves to do really quite difficult things. And, you know, the idea is that that then translates into elsewhere in life. You know, they have to calm themselves down and, you know, focus before they do something potentially dangerous. And when they get into a stressful situation, then they can do that. So I think there's kind of various ways of getting kids to make this mind-body connection that I think we're missing out on in schools and just in life in general. I think, the same could be said for the adult population as well, and for elderly people and in mental health. You know, there's all these kind of avenues where this could be really important to make this body-mind connection. But yeah, I think starting with kids would be a really good place, because if you can get children coming out of school knowing that they can reduce stress, focus better, be more creative, all these things, by moving whatever makes them feel good, then, I mean, that'll be great for the next generation.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, even just walking the dog, I mean, that's so easy. They don't even know they're exercising.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Caroline, at the end of each show, we ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? So what is it that nobody told you about the emotional benefits that you get by moving that you would like to pass on to our listeners?
That it's surprisingly easy and worthwhile, because when you're feeling whether it's bored or demotivated or miserable or anxious or whatever, it's really hard to drag yourself up and out and do something, but it's always worth it. And I think that's something that you sort of learn the hard way, but if I could help people work that out easily, then that would be great.
Like you said earlier, little and often.
Absolutely, little and often. It doesn't have to involve going to the gym. It doesn't have to involve getting sweaty, in pain. You know, your body was made to move. You know, you don't see the hunter-gatherers of this world doing squats until their legs are in pain. They would think, I asked a researcher who works with these hunter-gatherers in Tanzania, and I said, what do you think they would make of high-intensity interval training? And he was like, they would think it's ridiculous. You know, they never exercise. They don't run. They compete with lions for their food sources, and unless they can help it, they don't run. So it doesn't have to be painful and horrible. It just has to be built into your life.
Caroline, how can people connect with you on social media and the internet?
Well, I'm on Instagram. I'm Caroline_Williams_science. I'm on Twitter at Science Caroline. And my website is carolinewilliams.net.
Well, Caroline, we thank you so much for joining us. This has really been motivating.
Fascinating. It's so interesting. It's like it's encouraging, I think.
Okay. I want to get up and go take a walk.
Come on, everybody.
Again, our thanks to Caroline Williams, whose new book is called Move: How the New Science of Body Movement Can Set Your Mind Free. And again, her website is carolinewilliams.net. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.